The most recent divisions within Judaism are those of the 19th and 20th centuries. And they are divisions that actually project Judaism as it exists today. 19th century realities in Western Europe, beginning in Germany, led some Jewish leaders to believe and to fear that the number of Jews would dwindle radically in light of the attractive lure of modern European society that now opened its gates to Jews as a result of the emancipation. In other words, this was a very practical and realistic fear that Jews would simply opt out. And leaders of this particular group within Judaism that feared this assimilation claimed that to save the situation, Jewish forms and contexts of worship must be rendered more attractive. And they found models for this in the dominant faith of the time, which was, of course, Christianity. In 1818, the first Reform synagogue, which would now be called a temple, and I'll get back to that in a minute, was opened in Hamburg. Now, that's not by choice that they're using the phrase temple instead of, not by chance, rather, that they're using the phrase temple instead of synagogue. Because for Orthodox Jews, a temple will be reestablished maybe in a future messianic age. And so you're not going to call your place of worship now in this interim period a temple. You'll call it, in Hebrew, Beit Knesset. But of course, once you do away with the messianic belief, which is what Reform Judaism would do with the personal messianic belief, that is to say, a Messiah that will restore the temple, etc., etc., then you can call your synagogues a temple. Within those temples, much of the prayer, which was now shortened, would be conducted in German, as was the sermon. The service itself was accompanied with the playing of an organ, which, of course, was clearly borrowed from the environment, from the Christian environment, and from the church service as these Jews knew it. Major ritual components of Judaism were gradually abandoned by early Reform in accordance with the heightened significance that they, the early Reformers, attributed to the ethical teachings of the prophets at the expense of the behavioral system mandated by the Torah. And as we mentioned in an earlier lecture, biblical scholarship of the modern period convinced the founders of Reform that while the Bible may have been divinely inspired, whatever that means, it was the work of human beings. Another step taken, stress on the national restorative element in Judaism was abandoned, as was, we noted, the belief in a personal Messiah. In other words, there won't be a restoration to the past because we are looking to the future. The radical approach of Reform in Germany aroused opposition, even in the ranks of modernists in 19th century Germany. Reform, one of the leaders of Reform, was a fellow by the name of Abraham Geiger, who was both a Reform rabbi but a brilliant scholar. In fact, he was an Orientalist, he wrote a brilliant book for his time, and maybe for all times, on the impact of Judaism on Islam and on the Quran. He also wrote a book on biblical criticism, but he was a unique fellow who believed that you cannot live only in the academic world, you have to live in the communal rabbinic world. And he was one of the major propounders of the Reform movement. But that movement aroused opposition. And some rabbis, even though they wanted to reform and they wanted to change, felt that the Reform movement had gone too far. One of these was a rabbi by the name of Zacharias Frankel, who broke ranks with the extreme reformers. This took place when a number of conferences were convened by the reformers in the years 1844, 45, and 46. And Frankel strove to preserve the frameworks and practices of historical Judaism even as he accepted the challenges and new realities and the new scholarly conclusions on the ongoing development of Judaism. Frankel himself became the head of another rabbinical seminary that was founded in Breslau in the year 1854. And the Breslau Rabbinic Seminary was really, again, a meeting of two worlds, of the rabbinic world and the scholarly world. And they developed this historical approach to Judaism. That is to say, this is a constant evolving situation that does not abrogate the past. And it does not abrogate an imperative of keeping the laws of the past, even though they might have been the results of human contemplation.